The Manitoba Association of Christian Homeschools would like to thank the Learning House for sponsoring this recording.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for coming out. I hope, can you hear okay? Can you hear at the back? Okay, okay, good. Can you, oops, you can't see. So, there we go. Okay. Can you see the screen? Okay, yeah, okay, good. Okay, feel free, anytime you want to stand up and take a picture of the screen, because I'm gonna have lists of stuff on that, so you're most welcome to get up and wander around this afternoon. Today, the information that you're going to hear is based on my personal experience. I did not research it or read it in a book or online anywhere. And just a disclaimer that I am in no way, shape, or form think that every one of you should do exactly what I did, but it is my hope and my prayer that you will leave this room with at least one, hopefully a few ideas that you can take home and implement in your homeschool. I feel that reading aloud to your children is the single best educational activity that you employ in your family. Andrew Poudois, who is the author of the Fantastic Excellence in Writing program, feels the same way. If you have five children and you go out and buy five sets of graded materials for your homeschool, you have just bitten off five times as much work as a public school teacher. So let me take you on a reading journey that will hopefully greatly simplify your life and be a bit less stressful. Your children are not going to school, so don't feel that you have to duplicate what the school system does. Not that it's bad or wrong, but it is designed for teaching a group of children at the same level, which is very different from what you have in your homes. Fewer children in your group, but at way different learning levels and abilities. So reading aloud is gonna cover ages about 3, 4, 5, up to about 15, 16, maybe even older, depending on the individual. By grades 11 and 12, your teens may need to be working on courses that they need to fulfill post-secondary admission. And that by that age, they should be able to work 100% independently while you're doing read aloud work with all the younger children. Reading aloud builds many important foundational skills, introduces vocabulary, provides a model of fluent, expressive reading. Children learn about a wide variety of topics. Their faith is built. We learn things about our children and how they respond to parts of a story that's being read to them. I was reading a book and a little girl, her puppy ran off and the little girl was upset because she couldn't find her dog. All of a sudden, my six-year-old started bawling her eyes out, and I asked her what was wrong, and she said, the little girl's dog ran away. Like, she just, I didn't know she loved animals so much, and I didn't know she was so engaged in the story, but so just watching her reaction helped me to learn more about my own child. Okay, where did I read off? Okay, the reader is modeling a love of reading, which is passed on to the listener. It's great fun to do read alouds. It sharpens their memory, and it is a pre-writing skill. It gets them thinking, teaches discernment, as well as builds a loving bond between the mom, the dad, the grandparent or caregiver, whoever's doing the reading, and the listener. I think the absolute most important benefit of reading aloud to your children is that it increases the child's attention span. That's my opinion. Some people may not agree with me. But in today's, it's crucial in today's world full of children with very short attention spans that happens to be fueled by an extensive use of electronics. The ultimate goal of reading aloud to your children is that they will learn that they can teach themselves anything simply by reading either a book or online. I had this modeled to me by my father. He was the oldest of three children. When he was 13 years of age, he was removed from school. He had to work to earn money to feed his family. With his grade 8 education, he was able to read a book and learn how to do carpentry. He read another book and learned how to do electrical work. He read yet another book on how to fix cars. That is how I grew up. I wasn't homeschooled, but my dad was constantly learning and doing, because we didn't have the money to go out and pay professionals to fix everything and do everything for us. Okay. So my dad passed that skill on to me. When I wanted to learn how to crochet, I brought a book, I learned how to crochet. Oh, actually I bought some hooks and yarn and all that that goes with it. I passed that skill on to my own children. So when they want to learn how to do something, they would get a book. One of them wanted to learn how to knit, and she got a book, taught herself how to knit. She passed that skill on to her sister. One of them wanted to make a film studio quality Star Wars costume. By this time, it wasn't always a book that was read, but she researched all the information she needed online, read it. She learned how to use tools, how to cut, heat, and mold plastic into costume shapes, and just all kinds of stuff, just by reading a book. So that's about 14 benefits I came up with altogether from doing read-alouds with your children. Reading opens up the world to our children and to ourselves. I would estimate that about 90% of our homeschool time was based on mom reading aloud to the children. Now, I'm not just talking about reading one little picture book a day, but when they were young, we read dozens of picture books in one day, or entire chapter books as they got older. We read for hours and hours and hours every day. Today, I have three young adults who are avid readers. They still devour books for pleasure and for learning. They read from a wide variety of genres. My one daughter goes out now and buys really fancy versions of books that she really likes and uses them to decorate her condo. She even did one series of books, the particular beautiful covers that she wanted weren't available for purchase in North America, but fortunately we have relatives in England and I was able to get my cousin to order those special books for her, so she was really happy. One of my daughters, when she was a second year university student and came home sick, she asked me to read to her. So I spent 2 days sitting by her bed as a young adult reading her a novel. Now, I'm sure that many of you are wondering how I got them to sit still for hours. Well, first of all, I didn't have boys. But I do have a 17-month-old grandson now, so I'm learning about boys. Second, we didn't do it all in one shot. We usually started after breakfast with devotions, prayer time, and Bible reading. Then I would start reading some days for half an hour, some days for a couple of hours. So it depended on how they were doing. I read all of their science to them, which was from Apologia. It's not called that anymore. What's it called? Jay Weil, who's our main speaker. It's his stuff, but it's this company that is sold and, you know, things are redone. Anyways. We did very few assignments. Sometimes we did some experiments in science, but I didn't have them write out all kinds of stuff. We read the story of the world together for social studies, but we didn't do any assignments. I didn't really feel there was a point in it. They were going to just forget all of it. The reason why we read most of it is because we have to, because there's a social studies category, right, we have to fill in. So we didn't spend a lot of time on that. When there was a topic they were interested in, we would read a little more. So we didn't have a super tight schedule. After reading, everybody got to do math. Lunchtime came along, and then after lunch, we would read together some more. At mealtimes, the kids were always allowed to read books, except if we had company. I know normally it's not good manners, right, to read at the table. But our meal table was often quiet because everybody had their nose stuck in a book. There were piles of books all over the house, and that was fine by me because I felt it was important to do whatever I felt I could do to encourage a love of reading. And usually the kids were read to for an hour before bed in the evening. Anytime we went on family trips and Dad was driving, I would read to them much of that time. Okay, getting back to sitting still while I read. A third point would be that my children all became adept at doing something while I was reading. Okay. Snuggling up to Mum was just fine, and so was knitting with needles or finger knitting, embroidery, making bead bracelets, doing perler beads, building with Legos, coloring, puzzles, drawing on large pieces of paper, coloring with those floor size coloring books you can get. Sometimes I would ask them to draw what I was reading. When we were reading from the book of Revelation, I had them draw what they heard Mum read. You know, 12 people around a throne and creatures, four creatures that looked like different things and had eyes all over them and wings and all that. It was very interesting to see what they drew. And it's also a way of seeing, are they paying attention to Mum? Let's see. Sometimes they could do sticker books, sometimes general doodling. Sometimes they rolled around on the floor. Sometimes they just laid around on the floor. They could even sit on the back of the couch. Wasn't our good couch, though. But and they were only allowed to do that during reading time. Sometimes I had them take notes. Sometimes I gave them a theme of what I wanted them to write down, such as an example. Write down all the examples of alliteration that you hear. Or it could be a simile day or a metaphor day. Or write down words that you don't know what it means or don't understand. Some of the reading aloud activities were only ever done during reading time, so it made them special or anticipated. It's more important that they are listening and comprehending, which is why you want to periodically ask questions. So one time we were reading a story about a boy named Samuel, and I asked them to try to figure out how old Samuel was, because, you know, books don't always say Samuel 9 years old, blah, blah, blah. They give you hints, though. Goes to school, so you know they're greater than 4. It's not high school, so you know they're less than 14. So it helps them to listen more carefully, and they need to come up with clues on why they think the child is a particular age. Or what country or town do you think he lives in? Because some books don't tell you, they give you clues again. Or there could be a picture. Like we were reading a Gillian Jiggs book, or I was reading it to some children at a story time recently, and I asked them if they knew where this book was set. And the one boy said, Toronto. And I asked him why, and he said, well, there was a picture of the CN Tower in that book, and he recognized that, so good for him. Some books, the author doesn't give names to all of the characters. It might just talk about Samuel's sibling, Samuel's brother, or Samuel's mother, and never give them a name. And I would ask them, why do you think an author wouldn't name all the characters? So point number 4 on how to get children to sit still and listen would be for Mom to read with passion and interest. If you sound dull and monotone, you could put your kids to sleep, or even worse, turn them off of reading. Turn them off of the love of learning through reading. On the other hand, if you sport a smile on your face, have energy and enthusiasm in your voice, like I'm trying to do here, but it's hard late in the day when I'm tired, or even do voiceovers a little bit, you will score a lot of points with your kids. Act it out, get a little silly, ham it up. Don't be shy, it's just your kids. Nobody's recording anything or in the room. I'll just read a little paragraph from a Gillian Jiggs book, because Gillian Jiggs was one of my favorite picture books, and I think I had them all memorized by the end of my children's young years. But the moon had just risen high over the hill. The stars were all out. It was quiet and still, but instead of the sound of snoring and sleeping, Gillian Jiggs heard somebody weeping. Like, that's pretty dull, right? So I would try to read it more like, the moon had just risen high over the hill. The stars were all out. It was quiet and still. But instead of the sound of snoring and sleeping, Jillian Jiggs heard somebody weeping. Point number five, disappeared. Okay. Point number five, I borrowed from a good friend of mine who had an incredibly active little boy. The only way to get him to sit still for homeschool, for doing anything, was to take him out running or jogging for a solid hour right after breakfast with mom or dad. If the weather was bad, they used the treadmill or had him run up and down the stairs a lot, but he was just a super high energy fellow. My kids each had their own bookshelf in their rooms. I brought them books for Christmas and other special occasions and often encouraged grandparents to do the same. So my daughter is here at the conference and I offered to buy books for my grandson for Christmas and birthday and whatnot. So she gave me lots of ideas of money to spend. So I was happy to do that for her. Now, I should tell you that we didn't just read any old book. I was very particular about what went into the minds of my children. God bless them with good, sound minds. And I felt it was my duty to ensure that those minds stayed both good and sound, no confusion about right and wrong. So they had a solid understanding of their Christian faith. Anything that they or we read had to uphold Christian values. So that doesn't mean it had to talk about Jesus, but a good example would be the Animal Ark books that many of you are probably familiar with. I didn't do those as read-alouds. They were good books, but they were about a little girl adopted by two dentists in England, and her best friend was a little boy. There were about 100 books in this series, but each one was about an animal, and these kids had a little adventure. There was no bad language, no bad actions, nothing morally bad, even though they weren't Christian books. And any time the kids did get into a little bit of mischief, which was never anything super bad, there was always discipline. It was always dealt with by the parents. And I think that's incredibly important. Good, solid parenting and good values were modeled. Selection of materials is likely the most challenging part of working with books. So from my standards, when I was doing read-alouds, it wasn't okay to just pick good books or even very good books. I usually found great books or outstanding books. God was good and always seemed to provide good finds either in the library, at a bookstore, sometimes borrowed from a friend, but one of the best places to find great books is here at the homeschool conference in the Vander Hall. So instilling Christian character in the children was the top priority of my homeschool, even more important than academics. A large number of books work against that goal, so I centered the reading material of my kids pretty well from the start. So there were a series in the library, so my oldest is 26, so over 20 years ago, I was censoring what they read. So there was no Babysitter's Club, no Judy B. Jones. The Nancy Drew books, the modern ones, no, thank you. And all kinds of other books that I just didn't feel I wanted them to read. We all have different standards for our families, so you set the standard for your family and stick with it. Generally speaking, you'll have greater success with older books than newer books. Don't judge a book by its cover. I would love to go into a whole talk about a ton of inappropriate books in the public library system today, but there isn't enough time. We can chat about that issue later if you want, but books with explicit sexual materials, books that want to indoctrinate your children into various ideologies such as the climate alarmism and diversity, inclusion, and equity, top books that, and even picture books and board books, that very subtly introduce the topic of families with two moms or two dads as being normal and wonderful. There are dozens and dozens and dozens of inappropriate books in preschool, juvenile, and teen sections of our libraries and also in our bookstores. So just be on your guard when you're in those places. Don't let your kid just grab any book and read it and take it home. So all that was kind of just the introduction. I better see where I am for time. Okay, we're good. Okay, so how are we going to teach multiple ages of kids at the same time and with one book? Sorry, I haven't been changing that. Do you want to take a picture?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Can I get the one right before?
Yeah.
Thank you.
And then there was that one too.
Yeah.
That one?
Oh, no, sorry.
Okay, are we good?
Yeah, we're good.
Okay. Okay. So, let's start by picking a book. And remember, it has to be a great book. I don't know if any of you have ever used Five in a Row or the Canadian equivalent called Come Sit By Me, which is featured here. It's for working with children roughly ages 3, 4, and up till 8. They use great, excellent, and outstanding picture books. The current version of Come Sit By Me Volume 1 has been updated to study 36 picture books. I've actually got it here, and it's available from the Learning House. You would all have a blue card in your goodie bags that you were given when you got here, and there's a discount code on there if you're interested in getting this book. But what it does is, it has about 38 titles of fantastic picture books, and I had bought all of those books and still have them, that I use them with my children. Sometimes the books can be hard to get, but with books that are hard to get, you can use your public library and their interlibrary loan system. Okay. Those books are so good, your kids will ask you to read them over and over and over again. And you might even memorize them like I've done. I would recommend that you either purchase this or look at it in the vendor hall. It's an absolutely fabulous book. The author has pulled so many lessons out of secular picture books. She comes up with a scripture memory verse for every single book and a Bible theme that applies to the story. Well, an easy one, Franklin fibs. Well, he tells a lie, so she tells us the scriptures, the references for that we shouldn't tell lies. And she pulls science lessons out of books, math lessons. She talks about the artwork in the books, history, music lessons, and more, all through picture books. So that's how I learned to study more from novels based on the work that I had done with picture books, because there's no curriculum to teach how to do what I did. Okay. So, Come Sit By Me and using it when my children were young helped teach me how to easily draw lessons out of any book, a large book, small book, fiction or nonfiction. I didn't have time to prepare lesson plans. I've never done that. I mean, who has the time? Certainly not me. I learned how to read for content and to think carefully about what I was reading. The goal wasn't to read really quickly through a book and then get on to the next book, but to read slower, to stop, explain what a word meant, have a good look at a picture on the page, chat about it, possibly explain a figure of speech, metaphor, simile, point out a negative behavior in a character, ask your children why they shouldn't behave that way, perhaps pull out a map or a globe and show them where a place is located. We always had a map of the world and a map of Canada posted either on a wall where we did our homeschool, or we always had one a laminated one on the kitchen table. So it was like our tablecloth, because we had a lot of discussions at our table. And it was nice to always point out where a place is located in the world. I personally think it's important for kids to have an idea of If you're talking about Switzerland, well, where is Switzerland? Is it in the Northern Hemisphere? Is it in the Southern Hemisphere? Is it in South America? Or where is it? So we learned continents. They could name the continents fairly young. And yeah. Okay. We would often, pause at the end of a chapter if the action wasn't too compelling. And at the end of a chapter, it's a great time to put a bookmark in for another time, as well as a great time to ask the kids questions. You want to get them thinking using their gray matter. Teach them the idea of foreshadowing, or what do you think is going to happen next? Let each child answer, starting with the youngest, and expect more of an answer, more in-depth verbal answer, as you go up the ladder in age. You can change this to writing assignments and have them write down how they think a story might go or how they would like it to go. Do this right away, not later or after lunch, because they might forget what they have read. The point here is to get them thinking first and writing second. Kids can't write if they don't have anything in their heads. If your child can't write yet or is a struggling writer, just let them think for a few minutes and give you a verbal answer as to how they would like the story to continue. Let your kids know that all their ideas are great, and then be excited about continuing to read the story to see if anyone got the right or went in the right direction, or the same direction as the author. At the end of a book, have a discussion on how the story ended. Did you like the ending? How would you change it and why? Turn that into a writing assignment, perhaps. Expect your younger students to only write a couple of sentences. It's been suggested to me that the child should write the number of paragraphs of their grade. So if they're a grade one, they write one paragraph, grade two, two paragraphs, and so on. Okay. One of the greatest hindrances to writing for kids is that they don't have anything in their heads. So don't delay. Do this at the end of a book. Not every book, but whenever you feel that the story warrants a change. One book in particular that I recall that none of us liked the ending was a very famous classic, Robinson Crusoe. It was a fabulous book about a man stranded on a tropical island due to a shipwreck in about the 1700s or 1800s. It was so, so, so good all the way through, but spoiler alert here. After all the good stuff about his struggles and faith journey, because for years the only book he had to read was the Bible, a ship came along and rescued him, and he went back to England, finding his parents and brother all dead. And that was like the last page of the book, and I'm like, what a lousy ending, right? After such a great book. So we had a wonderful discussion as to how we think the story should have ended. Okay. One of the most exciting things about reading aloud to your children is that mom learns a lot of things too. And I think it's important to tell the children that. If you learn something you didn't know before, let them know and get excited about it. And that can encourage your children to read. So let's take a look at some books. Okay, the first book we're going to look at today is... well, it's up there. The Journey That Saved the World. And it's The True Wartime Escape of Margaret and H.A. Ray. This is an outstanding nostalgic book that the whole family will enjoy. I found it by accident at my public library many years ago. You guys all know Curious George, but one thing you can do before maybe reading a book like this is to read a couple of quick picture books of Curious George. Even teenagers like to be reminded of those fun stories. Every square inch of this book has educational value in it. Before we begin, we could ask God to give mom teaching and discussion strategies as the family works through the book. So let's examine the book before we begin. We can talk about the author, that knowing a background of the author can make a book more interesting and help you understand why it was written. Knowing a bit about the character of an author can help you determine if it is a book that's even appropriate for you to read. That same can be said about the illustrator of a book. In this case, Alan Drummond does an outstanding job with his drawings. They are all done in the style of the Curious George books, and I just felt that brought a lot of honor to the work of the Rays. So inside the front cover, you find a map of the journey that was taken by bicycle and train through France, Spain, and Portugal. What happened in this book? So this book is, I'm going to forget the year. Somewhere around the beginning of World War II, and you guys know how Hitler took over Europe. Well, Mrs. Ray was Jewish. Her maiden name was Waldstein, and they were living in Paris, and they escaped from Paris the day before the Germans invaded. And if they hadn't left by bicycle with nothing but a backpack on, and in their backpack, they just happened to throw all their manuscripts and artwork for their Curious George books that they would one day write. I hope they had room for a change of underwear in that. But. So they took a bicycle. It's hard to see on there, but from Paris south a little ways, and they got on a train and took a train all the way to Lisbon and got on a boat, and they went to Rio de Janeiro, and they were there for a while, and they ended up in New York. So we pulled out, well, we didn't need to pull out maps because the map's right in the book. The back jacket inside the back of the book has another map of the Atlantic Ocean and shows them going across the ocean and where they went there. Okay. So we haven't even begun to read the book yet, but there's a lot of interesting things about it. As well as reading and vocabulary, we've studied geography, history, social issues. We can talk about anti-Semitism, modes of transportation, trains, bicycles, ships, and there's art we can talk about. So there's a city called Paris on the map, so you can ask your kids if they've heard of that city before or know what's special about it. Explain to them what a capital city is. Ask them what the capital of Canada is and what the names of the provinces are. So there's some other tiny pictures on the map that you might not be able to see. And one is a picture of the Eiffel Tower. So you can ask your kids if they recognize that. Ask them how to spell Eiffel. Well, that's an interesting one. Can you spell it? What can you tell us about that tower? And at the top of that tower, what's there? And it's actually a flag, and it's the flag of France. So there's, you know, lots of discussion before you even start reading. You can do a seek and find on this page or in any other page and ask your kids if they can see flags in other parts of the book. You can ask your little children to build towers with blocks while you're reading to the older children. Inside the book a little farther is a page called Finding the Story. And the author, Louise Borden, she was intrigued by the story of the Rays' flight from Paris on bicycles. Oh, here it says June 1940. She was curious, just like George the monkey. Nobody seemed to know many more details than that. So she began her own research. And this page describes all the research that she did to prepare this book. I thought it was very, very interesting. My children really enjoyed it. We liked it so much that I went and bought it. Okay, Hans Augusto Reyersbach. He was born in 1898 in the port city of Hamburg, Germany. So there's some more geography and map work we can talk about. What's a port city? What does that mean? So many things to learn, and we're only on the first or second page in the book. It talks about he was born in 1898, and he met Margaret in 1906, so you can add some math in there. What's the difference in their ages? How old was he when his wife was born? You can also ask, how old was he when World War II started, or when the Germans came into Paris? So lots of ways you can incorporate all subjects in there. There's pictures of Margaret as a very young child. So this book, as well as having illustrations, has photographs of historic documents and actual photographs of people from a long time ago. So it adds credibility to the whole story and interest. So we're not on a timetable here. There's no curriculum and no set amount of work to get through before a particular date. So you just move through the book at your own pace. If you want to read the whole book through one day and then go back and go through and do explanations the next day, you can do that. You can do some chatting at the end of each page, whatever works in your situation. I always kept a log of every book that we read aloud, the date and the author. Each of my kids kept a separate spreadsheet for logging books that they read on their own. And I had them do it in a spreadsheet on a computer, so they learned how to use a spreadsheet. Very rudimentary, but at least it gets them started on spreadsheets. Another list that you could make is one of all the countries, towns, cities, states, or provinces that you visited during your adventures in literature. And it's just a great record, because at some point in time, you've got to put together year-end reports and mid-year reports. So by looking at your lists, it can help you put together your reports. After enjoying a great book and all the great discussions, your children are much more likely to remember the lesson, the history lesson, the geography lesson, the social studies lessons, when they can relate it to a fun story and a fun time that you had as a family. So our next book I'm going to talk about is Winnie, The True Story of the Bear Who Inspired Winnie the Pooh by Sally Walker. It's a really, really good book. I just accidentally came across it a couple weeks ago. Even though I don't have children anymore, you'll still find me in the children's department of the library. I wouldn't quite rate this book as outstanding, because it's a little bit shorter and it doesn't have maps or so much extra information, but it does give an excellent historical account. It has photographs, great artwork, copies of original source documents, a page of informative notes by the author, a list of sources of information, so it adds credibility to book, and some very interesting websites to follow up with. One has vintage video. This book is actually set in World War I. And it's actually kind of fun, because this fellow was on a train, and he was sitting there, and he looked out the window of the train, and a man was sitting with a bear cub. And so the guy got off the train. It said for sale, it had a for sale sign there. So the guy gets off the train and asks how much for the bear, and he buys the bear, and the bear becomes his pet. Even takes it all the way over to Europe when he was training for World War II. Oh, the fellow that bought the bear was a veterinarian. So, anyways, you guys all know the Winnie the Pooh story, so that was just kind of some really fun ones. Next book I'm going to talk about is called Mutiny on the Bounty. Now, this was a huge learning experience for me, because I always thought Mutiny on the Bounty was a movie and it was fiction. But after finding this book, this marvelous book in my local library, I learned otherwise. This book is now very hard to get. I had to order it through the interlibrary loan system of the Winnipeg Public Library, and it actually came from the University of Manitoba. For small town people, I highly recommend that you use the interlibrary loan system. It doesn't cost you anything to use. In Winnipeg, there's a form on the website, so you don't even have to go to the library. You fill it in, and then they send you an email when the book comes in and you have to go pick it up. I'm not sure how it works outside of the city. There could be a website or perhaps a paper form in your library, but you all do have access to the interlibrary loan system. So this is a really excellent book written by Patrick O'Brien, full of beautiful watercolors. It has a list of resources in the back. With this book, you will study naval history, Geography, again, mapping all the places visited from England to South America and off to the South Pacific Ocean. There was no Panama Canal in those days to scoot through. Oh, we learned about science. There's something called a breadfruit plant. That was quite interesting. It's a plant that once cut open, it actually smells like a fresh loaf of bread, found on an exotic island. Opportunities to study social studies and more abound in this book. Lots of character lessons can be pulled from this story. Lots of questions such as, how could the mutiny have been prevented? What is a mutiny? How do you spell mutiny? Have you ever eaten a breadfruit? Well, let's see if we can find one in a grocery store. Was the crew successful in their original mission? And what are some of the character lessons that we can learn from Captain Bligh? I don't have time to go into any more depth on this particular book. But here you can see some of the pictures, the maps. Picture of Captain Bligh, the breadfruit is down in the bottom corner. I would love to try it sometime. Oh, when you learn about ships and the parts of a ship and whatnot, I think the book is set in the 1700s. So we're going to move on to chapter books now. Let me just check the time. Okay. 12 minutes. Okay, so I think my all-time favorite book would be E.B. White's A Trumpet of the Swan. It's an absolutely outstanding work of fiction. It has black and white sketches sprinkled throughout. But one cool assignment for your kids who like to draw would be to have them draw pictures, more pictures, as you read through the book. It starts out in a swamp in southern Saskatchewan. A boy and his father are on holiday from Montana. The boy is out exploring in the woods and he finds a family of swans. Music and science are a couple of subjects you can explore in this book, because we learn a lot of things about swans. The male is called a cob. The children are called cygnets. That makes a great new spelling word, C-Y-G-N-E-T, in case you're wondering. We learn how cygnets hatch from their eggs, which have a 35-day gestational period. We learn that the babies are taught how to glide on the surface of water, how to fly, how to find food, and how to use their trumpet. Lewis is the name of one of the cygnets. His very proudful father is devastated when he finds out that his most precious son is not able to make a sound. He cannot trumpet. To rectify the situation, the cob, Lewis's father, decides to fly to Billings, Montana. He breaks into a music store and he takes a trumpet for his son. Lewis, however, is devastated to find out that his father stole the trumpet and makes it his mission in life to make amends for the sin of his father. Lewis learns how to play the trumpet well and gets jobs playing in order to make enough money to pay for the trumpet. So that's how pretty well the rest of the story goes. He gets a job at a summer camp in Northwestern Ontario. He gets another job in Philadelphia, another one in Boston, and I think one or two other places before he finally has enough money saved up to take to the music store in Billings to pay for the trumpet. And sorry again to spoil the book for you, but it's quite an adventure. The plot just keeps moving along and it's a lot of fun and you just never know what adventure is coming around the corner. So it covers many subject areas, appeals to all ages, even my age group. Really excellent Christian values are modeled and upheld in The Trumpet of the Swan. It's a book that you could easily read again in another year or two or when your next batch of kids comes along. There are plenty of opportunities for great discussions. One would be, why do you suppose Lewis's father is always referred to as the cob? He never is given a name in that story. The book is a great example of the literary device of anthropomorphism, and you can lead a discussion on that topic too. So many of us are familiar with the Wizard of Oz movie. But did you actually know that it was based on a book by L. Frank Baum? Actually, it was the first in a series of 14 absolutely awesome books, and we read all 14 of those books together. They are so much fun. They are so very language rich, absolutely chock full of literary devices. One of the books has 26 chapters, one for each letter of the alphabet. Each chapter name is an example of alliteration covering the whole alphabet. Frank Baum had such an imagination. If you do get this book from your library or bookstore, wherever, be sure that the author is Frank Baum, B-A-U-M, and that you get the original version. There have been many modern versions and adaptations, which are far from the quality and depth of the originals. A lot of stuff is watered down so much today. This is a great opportunity to do a book-movie comparison. Perhaps watch the movie first, or you probably already have. Have your kids take note of the many differences between the book and the movie. Ask which they like better and why. Older kids can do this as a written report. Younger ones can do oral reports. The older the kids, the longer the report you can expect. The scope of these particular books won't cover many subjects, but the interest level will remain high, and it does do a lot of English when you start talking about literary devices, that sort of thing. Their brains will be fully engaged in order to keep track of the creative characters that come along. It's language rich and will go far in developing the vocabulary of your children. The last book that I'm going to chat about today is called The Phantom Toll Booth. How many of you have heard of that book? Oh, I'm surprised. That's great, a few. This is a most unusual title, but it is a most unusual book. I would call it a masterpiece of the English language, and it is chock full of puns. Right near the beginning of the book, it starts talking about the weatherman. Now, that's W-H-E-T-H-E-R, not the W-E-A-T-H-E-R man. So we're going to introduce a topic of homonyms. The protagonist in the story, or main character, is a boy named Milo. He's lazy and he's bored, not interested in anything. I don't know if that describes any of your kids or not. But one day, he arrives home from school to find this toll booth in his apartment. Life is about to get changed radically, and he is about to embark on a journey to fictional lands far away in his toy car. The story keeps moving along, and you never know what word adventure is around the next corner. But be careful not to take a wrong turn, or you could end up in a place that is beyond expectations. Be careful of jumping to conclusions, and look out for the unwelcoming committee. There's so much to talk about in the English language, and so much fun to be had with this book. I was talking to my daughter about using this book in my presentation, and she was so excited. She said, Mom, I just love that book. Well, even as an adult, I enjoy reading this book and all of the books mentioned here today. So reading great books aloud gives you the opportunity to teach multiple subjects to your children of multiple ages at the same time. I did talk a lot about literary devices, and I could have done more, but literary analysis, I think, Anita, that'll be my topic for next year's workshop. But literary analysis was something that I absolutely hated in high school. Didn't understand it, didn't know why we did it, but I now love literary analysis, and I can actually do it. So I'm excited about it, and was excited about teaching it to my children, because there's one, the greatest book of all, I don't have with me, but you know, it's the B-I-B-L-E. And it's full of literary devices, right? It's full of similes. All men are like grass. What does that mean, like grass? Well, that's a simile, so you can explain to them what similes are. There's tons of similes in the Bible, tons of literary devices in the Bible. And I think by studying literary analysis, it has helped my family and myself be able to read the Bible and understand it better. So that's about all that I had to say today. I started making lists of lots of books. I can read off the list some really good books that we used: The Cricket of Times Square, Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn, which you're familiar with. The Narnia series are a really good series of books. The Hobbit, Little House on the Prairie, Little Britches, To Kill a Mockingbird, which is a banned book in many parts of the world, Uncle Tom's Cabin, Old Yeller, Mr. Popper's Penguins, well, Charlotte's Web, right? That's a great book, by the same author as The Trumpet of the Swan. 1984, Animal Farm, Fahrenheit 451, The Bronze Bowl, Black Beauty, Because of Winn-Dixie, Island of the Blue Dolphins, Anne of Green Gables, and there's tons of really good books, and you'll find many of them here, but unfortunately the vendor hall's closing. So that's about all I had to say, but there's time for some questions if you want to stay and ask questions, or feel free to leave if you want to. Thank you so much for coming to the conference, and please come back next year.